There have been a lot of times when that was easy to say, and other times, like I said this morning, when it was a harder thing to say. It was an easy thing to say when I was making $150,000 a year in songwriters' royalties. When we started this church 11 years ago, I made a deal that I was going to do this for nothing. I was going to work a full-time job. There was a time, being a pastor, there was a time I worked 60 hours a week being a pastor for nothing. And of course, God was really kind and he was blessing me in other ways. At that time in my life, my royalties were the most that they've ever been. I did nothing for that money. It was free money. So it was really easy to work 60 hours a week for nothing. Now I make 1/10 of that. Now it's a different deal. Now saying I'll do this for nothing is harder. And I've had to run this through my mind over and over, and that leads into the parable that we're going to look at. What was the agreement that God and I had in the beginning? The agreement was, God says, I'll take all your sins, obliterate them from the record, I'll give you myself, I'll give you a fabulous future, and there's no greater security than that. And I said, okay, I'll give you myself. I live my life for you. We sang a whole bunch of songs about that. And of course, for times during that, that was, the perks were fabulous. Other times it was hard, and it was hard to see the perks, because a lot of the perks come after you die. I'll tell you this, and I say it with absolute honesty. I have never felt more secure than I have when I have nothing except him. When you see it all go out the window, and you know that the peace that you have in your heart can't change, that's security. And it's like Max Lucado says, you never know for sure that Jesus is all you need until Jesus is all you've got. That's one of those things you don't know until you don't have anything else. That's a reward. Do you realize people are absolutely spending their every waking hour trying to gain that very thing in this world? Somehow get job security, somehow have enough in the bank, somehow stay healthy enough, somehow have all their duckies in a row, somehow be able to see far enough down the road that whatever contingency happens, they've got it all covered, and they're burning out their life trying to have that security. And Jesus says it very bluntly, says, give up. Give me everything. And then you'll be secure. And of course, whether we believe that or not is depends on whether we have that feeling of security. The third thing that is a present reward for those that have laid anything down for him. It's a Greek word, parakletos, parakletos, for those of you that write these down. Parakletos. It's the word, it's translated a lot of different ways in English. It's the word Jesus used when he told the disciples, I'm out of here, but don't worry, that's going to be better, because I'm going to send you another comforter, and he's going to be in you and with you forever. It's the word translated helper, comforter. It's a word for an attorney, by the way, in Greek. It means one who stands alongside of you in order to help you. And that was one of the fringe benefits of this rich young ruler dumping all of the stuff and coming in, hanging out with Jesus the rest of his life. That meant that you get to be with Jesus the rest of your life. Talk about somebody who's the master of any emergency. A guy dies. You know anybody else that can raise dead people? You know anybody that can feed over 10,000 people with a few fish sandwiches? Calm the storm, all of that stuff. Jesus said, hey, whatever you left to be with me, it's going to be more than worth it because you get me. And I'm going to always be with you. You know, you look at the story of Joseph and you look at all of the horrible plot developments in Joseph's life for like 20 years. It looks like the story from hell. It looks like if this is your life, you are just, you know, you're going to want out somebody else's life. Until the end, when he's the ruler of Egypt. But there's that one innocuous, I mean, you can pass right over it and not see it, that one fabulous phrase all the way through Joseph's life, and it says, and God was with Joseph in the pit. And God was with Joseph in Potiphar's house. And God was with Joseph in prison. And God was with Joseph in the house of Pharaoh. I was doing one of those feel sorry for yourself pity party things, which, by the way, anytime you have a pity party, the devil will cater. Oh, he loves pity parties. He'll bring videos and show you stuff you totally forgot. He'll bring canapes and hors d'oeuvres. He loves pity parties. And I was doing one of those things where I was sitting down inventorying all of my losses. It was just so pathetic. You know something? If you can do that in such a way that you can just focus all of your thinking on what you don't have, and you can totally miss what it is that you do have. You can look at the very same life and see two completely different things. You can feel ripped off, or you can feel spoiled rotten. Depending, and looking at the very same life, I was feeling ripped off. And I'm looking at all these bad things that have happened to me, and I'm looking at blah, 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 all of this happened, and this person came, and this, this, and I'm thinking this, and I'm waiting for God to work with me here. You know, come on, work with me, let's get a little pity going. He said, but haven't I been with you through everything? Well, technically, I was supposed to, did I ever leave you for a moment? Well, no, technically you didn't. Well, didn't I promise you that? Well, yeah. So isn't that worth knowing? Well, yeah, I guess it is. Well, how are you going to know it? You won't know it reading a book. You know it when you don't have anything else. You know it when nothing turns out the way you thought, and there I am. And I thought, well, yeah, that's a good thing. The fourth thing on my little list is guidance. Of course, the flip side of the guidance coin is that you know, to benefit from it, you have to actually follow and obey. But, I mean, at least you're not having to make it up yourself. And all you have to do is hang around on this planet long enough to realize things don't turn out the way you thought they were going to. Everybody that came to my wedding in 2000, when was that? 2002? Boy, nothing turned out the way it looked like it was going to. It went from my fondest dream coming true to my worst nightmare. Coming to. A lot of times you make the best plans, you do the very best job that you can, and things just don't go that way. What if that's all you had? What if you planned and you planned and you planned and you got to this point and then it all fell through? Now what do you do? But see, that's not going to ever be your problem or my problem when we belong to the Lord. I gave him my life. Yeah, nothing worked out the way, but that doesn't mean he doesn't have a plan. And I'm not on my own from here to the end of my life. His plan goes all the way to the end, and he's with me, and he'll guide me. He says so. He promises so. That's not nothing. In fact, I would submit to you, if my plans could be foiled by somebody making a bad choice, and God's plans cannot be sabotaged, Job 42:2 says, one of my favorite scriptures, then which would you rather have? Is it worth dumping all your own stuff and giving it all up and joining in with God's plan when you realize that you could do the best you could and your plans could fail? but his never do. So that is that 100 times better than what you gave up? Well, if you look at it right, it is. And another thing I put on my list is the word purpose. I wish I'd looked this up. Smarter people than me probably know it by memory, but there is some statistic that talks about the huge percentage of people who die within a couple of years of retiring if they don't stay busy. You know why? It's the word purpose. The whole reason that they've lived is for their career. They've lived to work. They've lived for the career. And when that stops, they don't have anything to live for. And they die. It's a measurable psychological phenomenon. It's a statistic. Here's the cool thing, and this also fits into the parable we're going to look at. God's kingdom may be the only kingdom anywhere where it's never too late to start. It's never too late to serve. It's never too late to have purpose. My grandmother and my grandfather built 27 churches. Some of them physically built them. My grandfather was a carpenter and a pastor. They had very fruitful ministry. They built churches in little hole-in-the-wall places nobody else wanted to go. Rowdy lumberjack towns up in the Redwoods of Northern California and Indian reservations, because my grandfather was Cherokee Indian. And then they finally got a big church. And then my grandfather had a heart attack at age 56 and died. My grandma just died at age 98. So she had 42 years alone. She got married when she was 17 years old. I was thinking about this, Marilyn, when you were telling me the other day, this is the first time in your life you've ever been really totally alone. And I can tell you from experience, till the day that she died, my grandma had purpose in her life. Because she just lived for one thing. She lived for Jesus. Whatever that was going to look like, if that meant giving guitar lessons till her hands were too old to bar chords anymore, if it meant praying for people, she constantly had purpose, because that's what you get when your life belongs to Jesus, because Jesus is always up to something. So what if you gave up your career? You've only got one kid left. And you've been a really good mom. And now you're not in charge anymore. Is there still purpose in your life? Absolutely. So, was Jesus exaggerating? I would love to have seen his face. And the words were being recorded for us when he said, "Everyone who has left anything for my sake is going to receive," well, of course, we know what we're going to receive for eternity, but he said, oh, it's not just that. You're going to have 100 times over even in this life. It's interesting that some of us, our Christian family is 100 times closer than our biological family. If your biological family is your Christian family, then you are just doubly blessed. But some people, when I went out to do my father's funeral, one of the difficulties was I knew that I was going to be seeing a whole bunch of people that don't want me to be here, that aren't happy that I left everything behind and moved out here. And I was going to have to face all the family pressure. You know, it's one thing, and I love them. You know, there's some people, you know, you have such a bad relation with your family that it doesn't matter what they say, you're going to do just the opposite of that anyway. But for me, it was hard. It's like walking in and there's these, you know, suction cups of all of these, they love me. They're telling me all the job opportunities there and, you know, the sucking thing of Bobby, don't leave, Bobby, don't leave. And of course, if I left here to go back there, it'd be the same thing, wouldn't it? So what's up with that? The first time that I moved out here, I didn't know one single human being on the entire East Coast of the United States. Not one. And now I know thousands. That is not an exaggeration. So, do you ever lose anything permanently that's good by giving your life to Jesus? No, you don't. You don't lose your friends permanently. You might lose them. I mean, there are some people I left behind I will never see till I get to heaven. But you know what? A billion years with them in heaven is going to be a drop in the bucket to the 20-odd years that it's been since I've seen them. So what have I really lost? These are the real practical terms, folks, of being a follower. Let's talk about the parable with the rest of the time that I have. I have about 25 more minutes. The last thing that he says in verse 30 of chapter 19, he says, many who are first will be last, and many who are last will be first. That's one of those paradoxical things that Jesus says that just talks about God doesn't run his kingdom the way you might think. And I think it's especially poignant because these very guys he's talking to were constantly arguing about which one of them was the most important. And he says it twice in a space of a few minutes. And then he goes on to talk about what's great in God's kingdom, which we'll look at next week. But it was a common theme, and I think we need to look at it very closely. God thinks differently about stuff. About serving and about reward and about who's important. And the other thing that is, I think, really important, and I think it's very instructive in this passage, I still have trouble wrapping my brain around grace. Grace to me, I am still expecting it to be logical, and it's not. It's unearthly. It looks wrong sometimes. Are you going to be bummed out when you get to heaven and meet Jeffrey Dahmer? You will meet him there. Because shortly before he was murdered in prison, he gave his life to Jesus, very convincingly. I have never ever heard an interview with anybody that exhibited more remorse. I never heard anybody talk more eloquently about understanding what it means to be forgiven. But he paid with his life. He was murdered in prison, beat to death with a broom handle. Is it going to really bum you out when you get to heaven and you see him there? I don't know. Personally, I think grace always works out in my favor because I know a few people that are going to be bummed out when they see me in heaven. I am not joking. I am absolutely serious. All my travels around the world, I have seen people who were frustrated that wanted to be professional musicians, wanted to have a career in Christian music. I've seen pastor wannabes and pastor wife wannabes who were ticked off because they didn't get to do it and I did. And they're mad because they said, we're way more spiritual than Bob Call. And I said, you are absolutely right. I will be the first one to admit I do not deserve any of the good things God's given me. It's absolutely pure grace. But I'm not going to be ashamed of receiving it either because he's not ashamed to give it. So that's the thing I see about this parable. It's why this and the prodigal son parable are really important ones to me because they have a very common theme. If you stop to think about it, they talk about people who are shown really an undeserved favor, which is what grace means. And then other people who did deserve the favor who are ticked off. And then the revelation of which side God is on, and the answer is God's on both sides. So let's read it, and then we'll talk about it. The kingdom of heaven, actually it starts with the word for, which you could say because, which means that what he just said in verse 30, the last shall be first, the first shall be last, applies to what he's saying here. The kingdom of heaven is like a Land Rover, I started saying, sorry. Too many of those in the parking lot today. The kingdom of heaven is sort of like a Land Rover, actually. Is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire men to work in his vineyard. He underlined the sentence. He agreed to pay them a denarius for the day and sent them into his vineyard. So everybody knew how much they were going to get paid. About the third hour, which is 9 a.m., he went out and saw others standing in the marketplace doing nothing, and he told them, you also, go work in my vineyard, and I will pay you whatever's right. And so they went. And he went out again about the sixth hour, which was noon, and then again the ninth hour, which is 3 p.m., and did the same thing. About the 11th hour, which is 5 p.m., he went out and he found still others standing around, and he asked them, why have you been standing here all day long doing nothing? And they said, because nobody's hired us. And he said to them, you also go and work in my vineyard. When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, or his steward, call the workers, pay them their wages, beginning with the last ones hired and going on to the first. Now, why did he do it in that order? There's no reason except that it just makes the point in the parable a lot better. He could have paid them in any order. But, you know, bring the guys hired last then, and then go on down to the first, reverse order. Verse 9, the workers who were hired about the 11th hour came and each received a denarius. And so, connective word, when those came who were hired first, they expected to receive more. And I write in my margins, why? Why did they expect more? They'd already agreed to work all day for a denarius. But they expected more. But each one of them also received a denarius. And when they received it, they began to grumble against the landowner. This is what they said. These men who were hired last worked only 1 hour, and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the work and the heat of the day.